Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast, where we teach you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in sunny Long Beach, California, joined by my good pal, Mr. Scott Fliegelman at Boulder Pickleball there in Boulder, Colorado. Hello, sir.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I'm awesome. And today we're going to talk about something that we sort of touched on a couple weeks ago, but this was something that watching your NPL matches, which are the basically the Senior Pro Tour matches, and to me how exciting they were, you were doing something as the right side player, as the forehand dinker that we talked about, which was you were aiming for consistency. And then you actually put a video out today on the Boulder Pickleball YouTube channel where you talked about one of the techniques that kept you so consistent. And we both decided that seems like a great idea for a show. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Before we do, however, I mentioned last episode, we are doing a live camp in Boulder, Colorado at the end of October. We have limited spots, 20 spots for the regular and 4 spots for the VIP. We actually have 24 people on the list right now, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't get on the list because it's not about the people that are on the list. It's about the people that pay. So make sure that if you'd like to come to our live clinic in Boulder at the end of the month, you go to picklehelp.com, picklehelp.com, and send me a message. Let me know that you are interested in the clinic. We're doing a VIP day on Friday and then the clinic on Saturday and Sunday. So please, picklehelp.com. Thank you guys, as always, for the ratings and reviews. They are a super helpful part of our journey. And by the way, you guys, as of right now, as of yesterday, actually, we hit 100,000 downloads of our little podcast. What do you think about that, Scott? 100,000 people.
Are they 100,000 unique people? That's amazing.
It's probably not 100,000 unique people, but it's probably, you know, a small arena's worth of people. It's probably 20,000 or something, which is cool. I would need to look that up, like in terms of uniques, but that would be kind of an interesting thing to consider.
You told me it was going to happen, and if we build it, they will come, and you were right.
Thus far, they have, and hopefully we'll see some of you in real person in Boulder next month. If you'd like a carbon paddle, CRBN paddle, the promo code is for 10% off is 402P. And let's get into this, Scott. We were sort of talking before we recorded, and I think you said something along the lines, I'll try to tee it up for you. It wasn't part of your strategy to do what?
Well, it was not part of our strategy for me to miss dinks or to be overly aggressive in that particular match that you're referencing. And, you know, I have continually revised my technique on my forehand dink to the point where I feel like it can be highly consistent. And I've shared key elements of that technique with the recent video that I put out with a fun metaphor that I call the 1-inch punch dink, borrowing from the Bruce Lee Kung Fu movies where, you know, from an inch away, he's able to knock down the heavyweight champion. But that, for me, that works when it comes to making sure that I don't have an excessive backswing.
The origin of this comes a lot from people that may have played tennis before or some other racket sport where they want to take a really large backswing. And that does not generally translate to consistent dinks. We want to limit as much backswing as we can, correct?
Yeah, I am a proud converted tennis player. And, you know, of all the coaching that I do, tennis players are the ones struggling the most with finding the optimal backswing. At first, you know, they're turning sideways and, you know, we try to minimize that. But, you know, hitting an 11 or 12 foot soft arcing dink is very unique to pickleball. And it, you know, it's nice to have a racket sport background, but we don't really replicate this kind of finesse in the other racket sports. I end up, you know, moving to a golf metaphor to be able to help illustrate a sport that it makes sense to hit a soft 10 or 12 foot shot, which we need to do when we're putting or we're chipping in golf.
So my best visual on this from a positioning standpoint is kind of like what a shortstop does. When you've got a line drive or a grounder, they laterally move so that that grounder is aiming basically at center mass. So they're not trying to catch it out on their right-hand side or their left-hand side. In this pickleball world, this is forehand dinks. This is what this is for. This is not for backhand dinks because your arm, you know, crossing your body limits how much backswing you can do in that regard. But on the forehand, we want to, again, focus on large muscles. We want to focus on legs and shoulders. So you like to position yourself basically right in front of this ball coming at you. Is that correct? Almost perpendicular.
Yeah, what I've decided to do is, since I can't be trusted, or the converting tennis players can't be trusted to minimize their backswing, is we need to get something in the way that stops us from taking too big a backswing. And on the forehand dink, for me, that's my right thigh. I need to get my body or my right leg in the way of the forehand backswing. So yes, as a shortstop, that's fielding that grounder in between my feet, not sticking my right arm outside of my right foot, which, you know, I can do that for a forehand dink, but at times I will take too big a backswing. And the problems with too big a backswing are twofold. Either I take too big a backswing and I accelerate through the hitting zone and I hit the ball too far. I pop the ball up. And equally as common, what I like to say, you know, in the video is, as I'm beginning to swing my paddle forward, I realize, man, if I keep this velocity up, it's going to be a pop up. So I've got to slow down. And now I'm decelerating the paddle. And when I decelerate the stick, when I'm getting ready to hit the ball, I lose all kinds of distance control and accuracy. So we can't decelerate through the hitting zone. Hence the short backswing.
I mean, pick a sport and you never want to decelerate through the hitting zone. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You could be kicking a soccer ball or, you know, hitting a racquetball, whatever. You want to be accelerating through the hitting zone. I really love the putting analogy on this, where you're taking just this, you know, 2 or 3 inch backswing from the ball, then striking the ball smoothly and then really following through. So you're keeping that club face accelerating through the ball as you go. Is this one of those occasions, Scott, where you could visually think, how long can I keep this ball on my paddle? You know what I mean by that? Like, can I try to extend the amount of time that the ball is on the paddle, even though it's not really, but with my pushing follow through, almost trying to push the ball over the net versus swatting it and it's, you know, only there for a split second?
Yeah, and there's a great analogy that my friend Jill Braverman uses, and I'll give her full credit for this, even though, you know, I'm sure she borrowed it from someone else as well, is in order to visualize keeping the ball on the paddle a little longer, which helps with accuracy and spin and control, is think about pushing a balloon. Now, you know, a balloon, we can probably keep on the paddle face a little bit longer. She's used that metaphor for, you know, her two-handed backhand roll, which is, you know, a premier shot. But it works really well, you know, for this one as well. And I can't really push a balloon or push a pickleball if I take a 2 or 3 foot backswing. I have to have a minimal, compact, negligible backswing.
Yeah, I like that. And then I think of something that we talked about very early on, which is the 12-foot arm. Does that come into play in this shot as well?
I think less so. I think of that more as a backhand. And, you know, if our listeners have a chance to check out the video, they will not see a lengthy follow through from me here because, you know, with a 1-inch backswing, I only need about a foot or two follow through for that ball to be accurately heading in the direction I need it to go. So it's percentage wise an extended follow through, but it starts with a really minimal backswing.
So we've got a forehand dink coming our way. We managed to get our body behind it. So now it's coming right at our body. Our thigh is blocking the massive backswing. The paddle face is down, basically pointing towards the ground. You're accelerating through the ball. What is your target in terms of height above the net and then your landing points?
It's a really good question because I'm thinking about optimal shape to my dinks that has to have a shape on it. And that shape is organic, not geometric. I do not want a line drive. I want an arcing rainbow shape to my dinks. So yes, I mean, from a technique standpoint, I'm going to relax my grip and relax my wrist and let that paddle head fall down to around 6 o'clock. It's not a tennis shot. This paddle is below my wrist. So when I brush forward, I'm also considering brushing around the side of the ball. You've used our clock analogy on the show before. I'm looking at making contact at 5 or maybe 4 o'clock on the bottom of a clock face. Remember, I'm a right-handed player, and this is a forehand, and I'm brushing around it. And again, not so much for a funky bounce on the other side as it is to create a shape that starts with a foot or two of net clearance and then has a little bit of controlling spin on it so that it will dive before it, you know, ends up a pop-up on the other side.
Yeah, you want this thing to be non-attackable, not only from the air, but on the bounce. And having a little bit of that juice on it keeps it down in a way that's not as attackable. What about location? Do you have a location in mind that you're, you know, trying to hit?
Yeah, since this is primarily a forehand dink, I'm on the right-hand side, and I have generally two. The obvious one that most players will fall in the habit of is an extreme angle where I'm looking to get that ball out to the corner of their kitchen, looking for an off-balance reply, pop-up, something from them. The less familiar shot, and we've talked about it on the show some, is their left foot or a ball closer to the center line where I might cause some confusion between the two players, or you need even more excitingly getting that ball to their left foot so it's a low backhand and that's where they're popping it up. And I'm pretty focused on those two locations.
So assuming that we get this thing down into a consistency, and again, as you described this in your NPL match, these aren't aggressive dinks. I think we talked about it being the Toyota Camry of dinks. You're just trying to be 100% consistent with it. Although every once in a while, you might introduce a little juice into it to keep them honest. Talk a little bit about your potential, you know, wrist flick or some way to since you've lulled them into a sense of complacency, what you might do with that.
Well, that's exactly the key is, yes, I can instigate from this exact same position. And one of the keys to a successful instigation is my acting skills. Have I lulled them into a sense of security that this is going to be a benign dink? And then from there, you know, I may choose to accelerate the ball at the player directly across from me from the exact same setup, get that ball on him 20% faster than he's expecting. If I have them expecting, you know, the ball to bounce at their feet, I might go ahead and get that ball, you know, in on them when they're least expecting it. I like to attack when their shields are down, you know, so if I can get them to relax, then, you know, I can have a more effective, more successful instigating move if their shields are down.
So you might go like left shoulder on the right side guy if you were going to point across court instigation?
Yeah, right shoulder in that case is heading out of bounds. So I, you know, might try to tie them up. Generally, this doesn't work. Generally, I don't like any kind of speed on a cross-court ball. But
yeah,
from this position, if I've got them expecting a benign dink, I may be able to surprise them. Because that extra backswing is one of those telltale signs that, you know, that they're going to do a speed up. So if none of my forehand dinks have any backswing, then there's no giveaway. I'm not tipping my hand at any point.
So this is a relatively easy one to drill. You get a cross-court forehand, you know, if you're righty, you're both righties, you're both on the right-hand side, you're doing forehand dinks to each other. Just change from that sort of straight arm scooping, you know, backspin dink that we probably all do a lot of to now shifting your body behind the ball. So you're both kind of facing each other at this point, right? You're both kind of perpendicular to each other, but diagonal across the court and doing that, you know, between the legs, body in the way, nice controlled forehand dinking. And I bet you could shoot for 50 easily without too much trouble.
Yeah, cross court is the best way to drill this because it is really where we should be doing most of our dinking. And the mistake can be really clear. If you stay parallel to the kitchen line, then I don't think you're quite getting your right leg in the way or your leg closest to the paddle in the way. You've got to turn on a 45. You have to incline yourself toward your hitting partner to be in between the ball and the giant backswing. So you got to really shift. In my case, the left foot's got to come back a little bit and I have to incline my direction towards my hitting partner. And then I've got my backstop in place.
I will link the video up in the show notes, guys, if you are listening to this and you'd like to see Scott do the actual visual of this. It's probably going to be on Boulder Pickleball as well on Instagram if it's not already, but it will, I'm sure, find its way there eventually. So again, drill this thing, add it as another tool in your arsenal. It's not every single time, but when it's part of your strategy to, you know, effectively wear them down and into a sense of complacency at the kitchen line, you don't want to be the one that's missing your dinks. So I would say in general, adding the short backswing, nice follow through to pretty much a lot of balls that are right there at the kitchen line is probably not a bad idea, right?
I would agree. And, you know, for a future show, as we begin to back up, we can add incrementally larger backswing. But right. To your point is across the board, we need compact backswing and nice extended follow through. And that just gets a little bit longer the further we go back to the baseline.
Folks, you've now just listened to another episode of 4.0 to Pro. Check out the show notes. Please write us at picklehelp.com if you'd like to be part of our live camp at the end of October. And you guys go out there, have some fun. Keep on rocking. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.